There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.
Good morning, Gamecock fans. Today's Friday, January 23rd, the year of our Lord 2026. This is Coffee with J.C. Sherbert. Appreciate you joining me here on a Friday. It's been a fantastic week. Hope you're preparing for the weather that is inbound down south. I know the whole country is very cold right now. I took a look at the forecast for Greenville because Mad Dog and his family live there. My mom lives there. And, boy, single digits and all that good stuff. Goodness gracious. Just hope the precipitation, the rain is not, or the ice does not knock the power out. That's my hope and prayer for all of you. It doesn't look like it's going to snow. No, it's like just ice sucks compared to snow. Snow, it's pretty. Everybody hangs out. They take a day off work and school, and it melts. And ice, it causes all kinds of problems, trust me. So, saying a prayer for all of you. My guy, Deputy Smitty, on X last night was like, I think I'm going to go to the beach and just, he's in the upstate, so Spartanburg. I think I was going to go to the beach because what are the chances my power doesn't go out? We'll just take the show on the road. I don't blame him for that. I don't know that I wouldn't have made the same decision. But anyway, got my thoughts and prayers with folks in South Carolina. And you're on my mind, and I just hope it's not as bad as maybe some people say. Sometimes it's not, so that's good. Chiefs Sports Network on Fridays, always bumping. We have Four Quarter Friday coming up live at 9. The regions in high school sports in South Carolina, South Carolina High School League, that's always a controversy. I think that organization, the high school league, is kind of following what I call the doctrine of no. They tend to turn down more appeals, it seems, than they approve, even though some of these schools have very good gripes, but that's certainly up to that organization. I did notice Burns. I'm a Burns guy. They separated Burns and threw him in a region with a bunch of Greenville teams that they normally beat pretty good. So interesting. When I think the last time that happened, Burns went from 3A to 4A when I was a sophomore and got put in a region kind of like that. And it's sort of, I don't know, you know, Burns is a Spartanburg County school. It's on the west end, obviously, borders Greenville. And they have a little rivalry with Greer from back in the day. But Burns likes to play Spartanburg and Dorman and Gaffney and Northwestern and Rock Hill. I mean, you know, playing the Greenville and Anderson teams doesn't do much. But it does look like it's favorable for the Rebels as far as winning goes. And then Gaffney's down in 4A now. Really interesting realignment and region assignments from the high school league. And Matt Smith, who's excellent, and Steve Hall, who's also excellent. We'll take you through that. Also, hoops, high school basketball in the state. It's underrated, undervalued, a lot of great teams. Can't wait to follow the tournament this year. Andrew Baxley from Prep Hoops SC and Akeem Balaam from Prep Girls Hoops SC will join Matt and Steve to break all of that down. Please follow Four Quarter Friday. It's at Four Quarter Friday on Instagram. On X at Four Quarter Friday. Also, YouTube at Four Quarter Friday. That channel is being built up. So head on over there and hit that subscribe button. Help us build it right here at the Chiefs Sports Network. But we always love high school sports here in the state of South Carolina. And that's exciting. And that's kind of, we're going to get into some of that too as it relates to Gamecock recruiting here in a minute. The morning show, JB got a chance to go up and watch the baseball scrimmage yesterday. So he'll have some thoughts on that. Also, Stuart Lake is in. That's always a great conversation on a number of topics, baseball, things going on around the university, whatever, you know, pick your poison with Stuart, wrestling. It's always a great conversation. Also, Rafael Esparza from Doc Sports will be in to tell you who to pick this weekend in the NFC and AFC championship games for entertainment purposes only in the state of South Carolina, obviously. But if you play the number, there's no better than Raphael. Some people like they don't like Raphael's anti-SEC stance, and I'll just say this: it's kind of all. Look, he's a line. He's an odds maker, right? His purpose is to tell you who to pick in a game, and he's from the Big Ten country and all that. So I just want to encourage everybody: don't get mad at him. You know, I don't agree with him either, but I don't. When I'm on with him, I don't really argue. I did once, and I felt bad about it because that's not really – he's not an analyst or a commentator. He's not Joel Klatt or Danny Cannell. He's just a guy that looks at the number and gives you advice, and he's pretty damn good at it. So Raphael will be along. Then on the show, we have a mashup, late-night Gamecock show, and the show mashup. Matt Anderson will be in. The late night Gamecock himself to co-host with Phil and I. And then Alex, who was covering a tennis match yesterday. I was like, well, isn't the weather bad? I ain't going to cover tennis. But he will be in with the Gamecock Smorgasbord. So we're going to chop it up about a lot of topics on the show today. And so be sure to check that out. That'll start around noon live. Chief Sports app, YouTube, X, the new podcast channels. Don't forget those inside the Gamecock shows and podcasts for this one. The show, the morning show, also the late night Gamecock show for the late night Gamecock show, Rooster Rant when we're in season for that, and all that happy stuff. Okay, so house cleaning is over. Gamecock women lost last night in overtime. I think 94-82 was the final to Oklahoma. Back and forth game. Sooners pulled away. Nice win for them. You're in basketball is not an undefeated sport. I know I say that. And everybody's like, what about the time they went 39-0? And women's basketball can be an undefeated sport. That happens way more frequently than the men's game. But it's a tournament sport, and sometimes you learn lessons from losses, and sometimes when you don't lose and you get into the tournament, you know butts start getting tight in basketball. We've seen it a couple of times. Saw it with Kentucky a couple of years ago when they were undefeated and lost to Wisconsin. I remember back in the day, UNLV was undefeated. They lost to Duke in the semis. So sometimes in that sport, that happens. A couple of losses don't kill you. I don't know if there's any concern. The SEC in women's basketball has gotten better, especially with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma. Vanderbilt's obviously doing some great things. They come in this weekend for a big game. And so there's that with that. So tough loss, but we'll see what happens. The men will try to win for the fifth straight time in College Station, Texas on Saturday. I'm sure that Matt will have some thoughts on that game as well as Alex on the show later today. But we always talk football here on Coffee. That's kind of the niche. It's not easy to talk about one sport every single weekday from yours truly, but I can do it. We're going to get into all – we're going to analyze the team, the program, the coaches, the players, the history. We're going to do all that this offseason, so stay tuned here to Coffee for all of that. So today's topic, I wanted to get into this because yesterday I talked about money, and it was a good conversation to have just because, you know, without – and look, the governor said something yesterday that you know, it was unfortunate, unrealistic in some ways. I don't know about unfortunate. He's entitled to his opinion. But McMaster said, yeah, I don't even like NIL. I don't think they should have NIL, and it should all be public. And there is a school of thought about that, you know. And as somebody that has argued against things like private equity in college sports and talked about the value of the brand that is getting ignored and the money and all that, argued against that. I will say, just from a perspective of competition, if you want to release the numbers publicly, that's fine. But here's the problem with that. And I don't think Governor McMaster's looked into it. I think he's just speaking generally. And if Clemson and South Carolina were forced to do that and nobody else was, it's going to hurt competitively. Because here's what's going to happen with that, folks. And I'll briefly touch on this and get on to the main topic du jour. it's so fractured right now as far as where the money's coming from. For example, everybody talks about Sorsby from Cincinnati, who I guess is this elite. I thought he's a really good player. Maybe the quarterback market's not as good as it was last year. But he's gone to Texas Tech, and they talked about $6.5 million. Well, if you do the math, that would be almost a third of the entire revenue share budget for the entire athletic department per the settlement and the cap and all that. We know they're going over the cap. So the rest of it's outside, it's fuzzy. It's outside NIL, private businesses, private deals. Those are not subject to FOIA laws, Freedom of Information laws. So here's what's going to happen. Part of it is, I think that, for a long time, I was kind of worried about, fans, not Gamecock fans necessarily. There's a few out there that love to just think that it's their right as a God-given American to personally attack players on X. And like they're Philadelphia Eagles fans, and these are grown men, just because they're getting paid. And the minute a guy that's getting a big number screws up, that's going to be thrown in these guys' face. And so you may say, well, JC, they're getting paid. They just have to live with it, live with the criticism. Yeah, well, see, I care about winning. And I know, and I'm smart enough to know that these are young people, and they're very, very, they're not as resilient as grown men professionals. And they don't stay off social media. They're going to see stuff like that. And so, because it's a developmental sport, football, college sports in general, that kind of stuff can snowball. I mean, it can ruin some, oh gosh, and it just adds to the pressure. And I think we've seen through the years around here that players that play with a lot of pressure on them, they don't respond well. And that's true across college sports. And that's true across college sports. So, I care about winning. And I think anything that's frivolous, which that is, that's really just, the money that somebody's making is not relevant to a real-time reaction. Right. Now, look, you can go back after the season, or if a guy's struggling, and I'll tell you who to blame if you want to blame somebody and criticize somebody. Blame the people that paid them, the coaches. They're adults. They're responsible. That's not off limits, right? But fans, some fans don't do that. There's some real crazy people out there, or at least their social media, I guess, personality is. And they're tweeting and sending X messages at the player. That's awful. I mean, that's usually a drunk, or somebody that really needs to check themselves at the door, because nobody deserves. And I'm all for accountability, and I'm all for guardrails on this stuff. I think some of the money out there, the players, certain players are not worth the money their agents want or whatever. I'm all with you there. And that's a conversation to have. I'm talking real time. And so that's why I'm against that. That's A. As time has gone on, if everybody released it, I think it would kind of buffer it a little bit, because then everybody'd be in the same boat. But what you will have is teams that aren't winning, or that are struggling real time within a game. See, it's real time. It's not like, oh, that game sucked. This guy what makes this. He was awful today. It's in a game, and the player. Now, let me be clear. I'm not sitting here saying that the player is going to see that during the game. I'm sitting here see it afterward. Like, my God, I threw an early pick, and then I came back and threw four touchdowns, and this crazy person. I mean, I remember very distinctly someone tweeting about a basketball player at halftime a couple of years ago. It's a horrible thing to say. And then the guy came back in the second half, scored 18 points. And that's just one example. And it's just, you throw the money into it, and I think it's going to keep players from developing as they should, and it's also going to cause your team to lose. I don't think that you're right to sit there and criticize somebody real time for salary and throw a bunch of crap on X. Means that the rest of us have to sit around and live with a loss. Right. And I agree, be resilient, deal with it. They're making money, tough. I agree with that portion of it. What I'm talking about is the real time stuff, you know, and the com and the direct things. We just don't. I mean, they're still kids, and they always will be, unless we have unlimited eligibility, and then all bets are off, which some people won't. So, I'm just saying, you know, that's just my take on why I don't think the exact amounts need to be out there, first and foremost. And then the other part of it is this: it's so fractured, like where the money's coming from, that you'll have rev share numbers that you'll be forced to release, right? Well, Soresby from Texas Tech, 6.5 million. There may be $500,000 that's on the books for rev share because it all comes from the outside. And you have an army of college football aggregators that have no sense. They're engagement farmers, basically. They're good at engagement farming. I'll agree with that. But it comes across as news. And so I can just see the Instagram post and the tweets. Oh, well, they're really only paying him this. Well, no, that's the rev share number. And then the outside number is this. Maybe if everybody did it, you know, there'd be some transparency on these outside deals, and I'm all for that. But if you do that at South Carolina, you know, and South Carolina and Clemson and Coastal are the only ones that have to do it, what's going to happen is people are going to take that and they're going to go, well, here's what Lenore Sellers is making, and it may not be but a little bit from rev share versus what these other schools, Menza is making at Miami. You know, Sellers only making this, and this guy's making this, because nobody's smart enough to know the difference. They don't understand it, and it's going to take a while for everybody to understand. And so that gets out there. Now, it's not going to make Lenore Sellers leave, but the next time you got to go get a big time guy from the portal, good luck getting them to even visit, because their agent's going to look at that because they're not smart either, and go, oh. And then it's just going to take, you know, time is a big deal too when you're recruiting. You just got to scout the whole country. You got to recruit your whole roster. So you want them to take time to have to call and explain over and twist themselves in knots to explain. And even then, it doesn't, the agent may not believe you because they're, you know, it's out there on social media. And so until we get a situation where you can give an exact dollar amount, and even then, you know, you're gonna probably punch yourself in the face doing it, because some guys take discounts to go to certain schools because they love the school. You know, they want to win. Man, you know, it's kind of the whole concept, like when Spurrier got there and even Beamer and Muschamp, they took less money to give it to their assistants so they could have a good staff. You know, some guys that do that, Carolina and everywhere else. And so what that does to your, I guess nobody wants to be the lowest paid guy when they're better than that guy. And so then you just reinforced entitlement and all about, if you don't want to make it all about the money. And most people that are demanding this, like Henry McMaster, to get out, don't want it to be all about the money, then don't let the numbers out. I mean, it's that simple, because what that does, it just drives the whole thing and throws gasoline on it. If everybody does it, you know, even then you're going to have some competitive issues, I think. But if everybody has it out there, you know, it'd probably be a little bit interesting to see how much outside NIL, because you can do the math on it, you know. But even then, some of these numbers are floated out by ages, 6.5 million. It's probably not even that. There's no way to verify, you know, it's just rumors, or, and it's always in an agent's best interest to make it as high as possible. Look what I got this client, so I can get more clients, and then I can falsely drive up the market value and negotiate based on bad info. So anyway, but the governor did mention that, and I can't agree with that as it stands now. Like, I think in our state, historically, we've fallen on the sword. University of South Carolina too. Fallen on the sword too many times over the years, and it's hurt. And we're at a point in our state where we don't have to do that anymore. It's a great place to be, and the programs are competing. It's why do anything politically to hurt that. Now, I think there's a lawsuit making its way, a FOIA lawsuit making its way. So who knows what a judge will do. But like I said, I care about winning, and I could see a world where that would not help at all. And despite what our good, the governor says. So anyway, there's that. But like I said, South Carolina is a great place to be. University of South Carolina has come a million miles. Overall, you look at the campus compared to when I was there in 2000, it's night and day better. It's hard to get in. I have a friend in Tennessee. Like, my stepson can't get in. I mean, he has good grades, but he doesn't have the grades to get into Carolina out of state. I have a friend in Tennessee. He'd love for his daughter to go to South Carolina. She wants to go to South Carolina. She can't get in. It's popular. And that's good because that helps football, which is what we're talking about here. So they went 4-8 last year. Let's just admit that. Let's just admit it was a bad season. Let's just admit there have been bad seasons. Let's just admit that this program has been pretty inconsistent under Shane Beamer. If you look year to year, the first 2 years, you had an upward trajectory at the end of the day. But even in 2022, that team, I don't think you'd say was not inconsistent. So you look at it that way. Outside of the run at the end of 24, it's been up and down. Let's just say that. This is not about that. We've talked about Indiana and we've a lot this week, and probably not going to talk about it after this, but we've talked about, well, how did they do it? And this is going to be a case study in college football for a long time because it's just so, wow. You don't want a bunch of money had you had somebody given you a future on Indiana winning a national championship within 3 years, even 3 years of Kurt Cignetti being hired. So how did they do it? People portal, NIL. Some people think they've spent a bunch of money. I don't think they did. Some people just say it's all coaching. Some people say it's coaching and talent. I think it's all of the above. And I think that what they did, Kurt Cignetti talked about this, and he said, Indiana invested in football when they hired me. And what does that mean? That means making sure you've got the resources financially to compete in the player paid era. That means facilities. That means coaching hires. I mean, they didn't lose Cignetti to Penn State. They didn't lose their coordinators who could have gone anywhere. They did lose their strength coach to Tennessee. Isn't it kind of funny how Tennessee will just kind of take things? That's another topic for another day. But they've invested. And Cignetti mentioned that. I hadn't invested in football before, and it just hasn't been a very good program. You can kind of flip it on its side and apply it to Carolina basketball. Not that they had spent money on the sport, but have they gone all in like they have in others? Probably. I couldn't say that for men's basketball at Carolina right now. And if you're going to turn it around, that's probably what it's going to take. So anyway, Cignetti talked about that, and that's true. That's a big picture thing. Oh, they invested. So yeah, that's true. But then there are certain things that go into the secret sauce of winning. So what did they have going for them? Well, they had a coaching staff that was elite. They had players that they could develop. They're one of the best at evaluating players. And sometimes head coaches who aren't coordinators, because here we go. By the way, the people that were still outraged about Beamer never being a coordinator, Kurt Cignetti was never a coordinator, offensive or defensive. Beamer was a special teams coordinator. Sometimes those guys, well, that's their specialties, evaluation. And Kurt Cignetti, I remember when he was at NC State, I actually knew him a little bit. When I was at Rivals 20 years ago, he was just a really good recruiter and evaluator. And probably learned it from his dad. Frank Beamer, when he was at Virginia Tech, was an amazing talent evaluator. And that's kind of what he did. Frank Beamer himself wrote scouting reports for every player in the program, broke down the film, all that good stuff. So, there's that part of it that Indiana was really good at. Elite schemes, elite execution, and elite evaluation. And those things all fed into what happened this year. And the intangibles, the culture, the playing hard, all that good stuff. And they have the right quarterback. And even still, this is how hard it is. Josh Pate was talking about how, in his opinion, he thinks Indiana will be an outlier, and that's going to be a common opinion until we see something different in the sport. It's really hard to do what they did, and it is. And even as good as they were and as dominant as they were, they could have lost at Iowa. They could have lost to Ohio State. They could have lost at Penn State. That one was, that pass Mendoza threw. I mean, that's a one in a million championship shot there. They struggled with Old Dominion in the opener a little bit. 27-14 was that final. But, they had a lot going for them at the core of their success. What do they not have? Well, they don't have an elite in-state talent base. They don't have tradition. They don't they'll have to go outside of Indiana, obviously, to get players, although, they can kind of stay in that footprint. Adjoining states, if you will, Illinois, Ohio, for linemen and things like that. And, it's not a hopeless, hopeless, completely hopeless area, but it's one of them. One of the more hopeless. In Kansas and Indiana and Kentucky are not a lot of football talent there. But so all those things are going for them. So my question today is, what does South Carolina have going for it? Like, what right now under Shane Beamer does the University of South Carolina football program have that's an advantage? And that's after you go 4-8, that's a legit question. Most people will say nothing. I don't believe that. I think there are some things. I think there's some things that they're fixing, if you will. Those are different topics, but what does South Carolina have going for it that if all of it hits, you're going to look back and say, well, gosh, they turned it around, and here are the whys for South Carolina. And I think it starts, with something that is going to be there. There's with Beamer, without Beamer, job, program, teams. The first thing is just about the job. And look, it's a given that it's an elite fan base. It's a given that facilities have come a million miles, and all that stuff we know. But everybody's got facilities. Most people have fans. Heck, Indiana, believe it or not, now has a bunch of football fans. Everybody kind of has financial money, but that is part of this. It's more of a yesterday conversation. But so the job. What's good about the job outside of the fans, facilities, being in the SEC? From just a football, like, I can get it done here. It's the in-state talent base. And it instead of being a detriment, like a lot of people saw that, oh, there's just not enough players in South Carolina, and you got Clemson, and the good ones leave. And well, that's changed. Well, some good ones leave, not all of them, and not most of them. Most of them come to South Carolina, and it's not something that you would even, when you dig into it, it's really a state where, if you do it right, if you leave no stone unturned, then you can really help yourself. Because I still don't think, outside of Charles Power at 0-3, who is the best of, I don't care if you put him in 10 buck two, it's one of the best evaluators, probably the best evaluator in the game, just for my money, and not just because I know him, and not just because he's from South Carolina. But Charles understands that. Other people don't. They look at South Carolina and go, oh, there's not that many players. And, for a long time, it's like, well, Clemson's not offering them, so they must not be that good, which is hogwash. Because the facts tell you that there are a lot of good players in South Carolina, and many of them are in small towns. Now, check this out. And this is something that Beamer and his staff, I think, have done an excellent job with. I hope it continues, right? But I also think that it's something that's going to be there, and that the talent base in South Carolina is actually going to expand as the state grows in certain spots. But it's something that I think is a secret sauce. Everybody loves the portal. I understand that. I see the views. The portal now gets more attention than signing day by a mile. I get it. But if you look at the Gamecocks, they need the in-state talent, because what you get is, instead of having to go into a big pool of players in Georgia or wherever, and they do well in Georgia, we'll get to that. You get three or four almost every cycle that end up being starters out of small places, either small places in South Carolina or regions that, you're not necessarily going to war to sign them. Sometimes you're just beating NC State or North Carolina. Sometimes you're just offering them, and they may have an offer from Duke or Wake, and they're pretty good. They end up being pretty good. Sometimes you are battling Clemson and the rest of the country for players, like with Currents this year. But check this out. So since the 2020 draft, the Gamecocks have had 25 players drafted. 13 of those are played high school football in the state of South Carolina. Now, if you're checking my data there, and you're going through the 24/7 sports database, you're going to come across Izzy McWamu, and it's going to say Bossier City, Louisiana. I'm counting him just for the purposes of this conversation, because he was at Berkeley for most of his career. He just kind of went out there his senior year. I think he was already committed to Florida State by the time he left the state and then flipped to the Gamecocks. And so 13 of the 25 from South Carolina, 23 of the 25 are from a tri-state area of North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia. You had Nick Gargiulo from New York, who was drafted, and Spencer Rattler from Arizona, who was drafted. Other than that, Carolinas and Georgia, and that's been it. That's probably going to change, but that's been it since the 2020 draft. So here's another interesting part of that. And I'm using the draft because that means if you're getting drafted, it doesn't really matter how you do in the NFL. That means people that know are looking at you and wanting to pay you more to come play football. I say more now. So of those, five of the 13, so a little more than a third, less than half, are from the PD in Grand Strand, right? PD slash Grand Strand. So the northeast corner of the diamond, so to speak. And get this. Of those five, Conway High School, so 4A school, they struggled this past year, the Tigers, has produced two, Brian Edwards, Tonka Hemingway. Conway's been good at the Gamecocks over the years. If you've been to Myrtle Beach at all, chances are you've gone through Conway. So they've got two. They're a 4A school. So the other three are from 1A schools, right? C.E. Murray, where Darius Rush went, is now merged with Kingstree, and it's still a 1A school from down in Greeleyville, South Carolina. Mullins is where Xavier Leggett came from, and Marion is where T.J. Sanders came from. All 1A schools. And that's a chunk of the South Carolina native talent that's come to the University of South Carolina and gotten drafted. Wow, it's not a bunch. You can't fill up a class that way, but if you start looking at, you get one or two a cycle, and they hit, you don't really have to go to the end of the earth to sign them. That's good. And this has been happening. I mean, John Abraham, I don't know, he's from Lamar. There's a lot of players through the years from small South Carolina towns east of Columbia that have been ballers, and not even including Florence, Sumter, your medium-sized to small cities, just like Marion, Mullins, the 1As. It's always smart. I mean, and there's been, players from everywhere, from Bamberg, Allendale, Fairfax, Calhoun, all over the state. So that's a secret sauce thing, because I can't really say that other states, because in Georgia, you kind of have county schools. Like, they'll take a whole county, feed it into one school. And they're not that, in South Georgia, they're not really small. They're not huge, but they're not small. North Carolina, in the eastern part of the state, I think you can find players pretty similarly to South Carolina. But in our little state, that's an advantage. That's a big number for one region of the state, and then three-fifths of it are from 1A schools over a 6-year span. And there's more that are from down there that are good, that have contributed and all that. Three are from the upstate, three are from the Midlands, and two from the Charleston area. And Conway is the only school, by the way. This is for all you Conway Tiger fans. I know my boy Jan is a Conway guy. just want to let you know, I know you struggled this past year on the football field, but Conway is the only high school that has produced two South Carolina Gamecock draft picks. The only high school in South Carolina that's done that the last couple of years. All time, obviously, South Point and some others have a lot, but since the 2020 draft, it's been the Conway High School Tigers that have done that. So I think that's an advantage. I think that's what South Carolina's got does well. I think that now you shift the conversation to Beamer specifically in this era. Well, what do they have going for it? And none of this is perfect, but I think in general you can take it a step further with high schools and recruiting. And I think as well as Steve Spurrier recruited at times, it obviously fell off late. As well as Will Muschamp, quite frankly, recruited. Beamer has done something that has not happened in the modern recruiting era, and that's go out of state and sign blue chip players. And that just hasn't happened very often. It's not that, I mean, like I gave the draft numbers, seven players South Carolina signed out of Georgia have been drafted. Muschamp did a really good job in Georgia. That's continued with Beamer. But, Ernest Jones, he's playing on Sunday. This Sunday with the Seahawks with Nick Emenwori is an example of that out of South Georgia. But and it's not necessarily been Georgia, and North Carolina has not really hit. The guys that have been drafted from North Carolina, Jovan Gwynn was a guy from Charlotte, a low four-star offensive lineman, and then Jalen Brooks and Nick Muse were drafted, but they were transfers before there was a portal. Came in from small schools. Brooks came in from Wingate. Muse came in from William and Mary. So this cycle, getting the Harris brothers and getting Noah Clark and getting the corner from Greensboro, whose name boosts, is it? Gosh, I don't know why that name escapes me right now. But Causey Barnes. I don't know why. Goodness gracious, JC. So the North Carolina thing, Beamer's gotten back in there slowly but surely, and they signed some guys from that state this year, and they're going to try to continue that, But that's a positive there. But then you move on up north of North Carolina, Shane Beamer signed 3 5-star players. Before that, in the modern recruiting era, composite, because I know Chris Culliver was an out-of-state 5-star. I know they've signed some 5-star JUCOs back in the Holtz era that were from out of state, but in the modern recruiting era, composite wise, this program's never signed out of state 5-stars. They've got three of them, and that's from the high school, direct from high school. Darius Gray in this cycle, Nick Harbor, Dylan Stewart, all north of North Carolina, Virginia, DC, DC. So that's good. That's really good. It's not a lot, not a lot of players, but, that's, if you don't have a 5-star athlete in your state or D end in your state and or guard tackle in your state, then you go out and get them out of state. Good. That's how you win, traditionally and stuff. And I'm saying that knowing that the portal is still a big thing and all that good stuff. Gabe Brownlow Dindy is a was a 5-star out of Florida before he transferred in, so you could maybe count that too. I guess the blue chip ratio will still be a thing. It counts for the blue chip ratio. But just those, going north has always been something that I think has made sense. Not every coach here has done it successfully. There's been some attempts, some that wouldn't attempt it. But I think that's great. Maxwell Hiller is an offensive lineman from Pennsylvania that's on deck, for 2026. He's got his official visit scheduled. I think South Carolina's the leader there. He's a 5-star guy from out of state. So, that's something that's a positive that this program has not done historically that's working right now from the recruiting standpoint. From the portal, I think this. I think we had the money talk yesterday. South Carolina spent what it needed to spend within the range that it could spend. You can't compare it to Texas or anybody like that, but 90% of the schools around the country, South Carolina's right there with them. I think what's going right in the portal now, and this is a key for this season, is they take guys that maybe have not produced, and it flies in the face of Cignetti's production over potential. I'm just going to tell you that right now. It's the reverse of that. They're good on D, and I'm going to limit this to defense right now. There have been some on offense, obviously, that have maximized individually because they're on NFL rosters and things like that. But I'm just going to stick to defense right now because I want to be very specific with this. Defensively, they are good at getting the most out of guys that maybe weren't as productive as you thought. And you've got a lot of guys like that on defense that have come in through the portal this year. Jordan Thomas is one. You've got, I would say Caleb Herring could be better. Kelby Collins could be better. But the staff has done a good job of that, particularly, you know, Brandon Cisse was a good player coming in, but, you know, I played his way into being potentially first rounder. So that's something they got going for him, that the short-term player development on defense. And I like the long-term player development, too, with what they do for the high school guys. But the short-term player development, there's some success stories, and it's worked out more often than it has not. Nothing's ever 100%. So I think that part of it's there. I think that the other things under Beamer that are good, we talk about culture. People don't like to hear about culture after a losing season, and I understand that. But culture, to me, this is how I define it, and I think most coaches define it that way too. It's not – culture does not prevent adversity in life, football, you name it. What culture does is it helps you deal with it. And maybe not – we talked about real time earlier. Maybe not in real time. Maybe it has to be after the season. And you look at the retention. I mean, everybody in the country would have taken Vakari Swain or Dylan Stewart or Lenora Sellers or you name it. Some of the guys that did leave that weren't worth two nickels in, you know, individually or as part of their unit, they ended up at Power Four schools. So somebody somewhere is seeing something, right? But the culture, for the most part, especially after the season you had, and then there's hot seat talk, and I mean, all the stuff that comes with going 4-8 and having a rough one, this program in general has been very resilient to maybe the mass attrition that has hit other places when they face similar adversities. I think that's a positive, you know, the culture. I think the strength and conditioning program and the nutrition program is elite. Just looking at the physical gains, some guys that needed to. I mean, I keep getting back to the D tackles last year. Nick Barrett in particular, you know, was a guy that, you know, got heavier again for his final year. And he played, but he played like he was the leaner version, if that makes sense. It was healthy. I know the offensive linemen, that whole room, probably you look at and go, well, not them. I'll admit that. I don't know the reasons for that, but, you know, that's one room. I'm looking at the rest of the team, and the rest of the team is in excellent shape. And they make physical gains every single offseason. They're Luke Day and Chip Morton and Jamil Walker and those guys. And the nutrition's really good there, too. I mean, so that's an advantage. And Darren Usher last offseason called it his secret weapon. And I think that that will continue, especially as they try to get some of these guys to play at their full potential. So I think that Beamer's got that going for him. You know, I think coaching is something that probably after last season needed to be worked on, particularly on offense. I think Clayton White's defensive scheme is what it is. I think as a coach, he gets better and better every year, a little more consistent. And they're the best team in the SEC at takeaways the last three seasons. And I think led the league this past year. That's hard to do because sometimes turnovers don't always happen. And so, you know, hats off to Clayton White and his staff. And his staff's good too. I mean, Torian Gray, I mean, he's worth every penny. Travian, Deion Barnes, those guys do a really good job. I think South Carolina's defense is going to be pretty solid. I'm not saying there'll never be bad days because there are, and it's a scheme that sometimes you'll get some bust on the back end. They gamble a lot with pressure, But they do a good job of that. I mean, now the double corner blitz against Alabama caused the fumble was something else. And that was just a great call. And he Clayton White gets better and better. I think special teams people will complain, and everybody got spoiled because Pete Limbo had a historic year dialing up fake punts and stuff in 2022. We all remember the Clemson game and hadn't been as dominant since, but I still think special teams around here are good with Joe DeCamillis because they're emphasized. Shane Beamer cares about it. Sometimes that's most of it. So two-thirds of the coaching, I think, is fine. Offense has been bad. Offense hasn't made much sense. Offense, I've said before, hasn't aligned with what everybody else is doing. And that goes back to aggressive, creative, and fun. Will Kendall Briles work out? I'd take my chances with this style more than the players they have, with the players they have more than what they're trying to do. Even Dowell Loggins and went all the way back. I mean, I like this better than everything else. I think it fits. I think it fits Lenore Sellers. I think it fits everybody. But I can't sit here and tell you, oh, coaching's good on offense now. They have guys with track records that are quite good, but they have to do it at South Carolina. And so I think coaching could end up being a strength. And I think Ellis Johnson was on and said something brilliant 2 summers ago. I don't think you can outcoach play people in this league because everybody's got so much talent and the talent's as even as it's been, but you still have to have players to go compete. And he's right about that. But I think now coaching may not necessarily win you games like coaching alone. Because a lot depends on, if you did a good job evaluating the portal, developing your players, that kind of thing. But coaching can definitely help. And coaching can, without a doubt, cause you to lose. And I still, this offense this past season had too many good players to be as bad as it was. So you have to lay it at the feet of coaching, and the offense around here has been inconsistent at best. So hopefully that got fixed, but I do think two-thirds of the coaching staff and the strengths that got that going for you. So that's something else. That's a positive. So if you can fix the offense, so I think does South Carolina have a list of things going for it that can allow it to ascend? I mean, it's not long, and some of it, as Mike Morgan points out, everybody else has too, but I think that when you talk about talent maximization with individual players, there's also something called program maximization. And I think if these things all are aligned and maximized, coaching on offense is going to be a big one, then that sets the program up under Shane Beamer to make a renaissance. But, a lot of times we talk about what's wrong too much, and these are things that are right. Right now, some, of course, in the coaching area, need it's a needs improvement. But you do have, if you're talking about all three coordinators, two-thirds are pretty good and have been. It's just the offense, and as far as Shane Beamer, clock management, all that good stuff. We saw what happened last year, and obviously that it wasn't the best year. Nothing seemed to work. I mean, it was one of those things, but he's done well before in that department. It's been inconsistent. Consistency, if you're looking for something that the program really needs to work on, is consistency. Be at your best at all times, every time out. That's hard to do, very hard to do, and it doesn't happen often. I mean, you're not always at your best in this. All right, don't forget Four Quarter Friday coming up, and then don't forget that the show today and the Late Night Gamecock Show mashup will happen. This has been JC Sherbert's Coffee. Thanks for coming to my little chat. Y'all have a great weekend and stay warm. I'm out. Holla.